Everybody, welcome to the Savannah County Board of Supervisors meeting for May 1st of 2024. We'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Amen. Anybody have a motion to adopt the agenda?
I move. Seconded.
Made by Mr. Goode, seconded by Mr. Hodge. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Passes 3-0.
Two absent.
County Administrator's report?
Yep. Mr. Chair, members of the board, just have a couple of things to report. First, I want to introduce Mr. Fortune, Todd Fortune. Todd, if you'd stand up. Todd's the new director of planning. Again, he started April 29th, and we are very happy to have him. Again, he comes with great experience, 20 years of planning experience, and so, you know, as you get the time, you'll certainly introduce yourselves to him, and like I said, we're happy to have him as we're going through a lot of big things with solar and the comp plan, so glad to have him on board.
Thank you. We're excited to have you.
Thank you. Happy to be here. A couple things just to report. So the Savannah High School Disc Golf, the Savannah County High School Disc Golf Club hosted their first tournament at Pleasant Grove. That was on April 13th. Three schools participated, Savannah, Gooch Lynn, and Trinity Episcopal Schools. Mr. Crisp, coach from Savannah, stated that the tournament went really well. The weather was beautiful. The course looked great. All involved had a good time. Got lots of compliments from visiting teams. Gucci won the overall event with Savannah placing second and Trinity Episcopal third. And Gucci's Luke Farkas claimed first place in the singles. Savannah's Cameron Lamb, the team captain, took second in the singles. And Gucci's Luke Daniel taking third. So glad to have that additional thing for students and adults even to do in Savannah County.
Awesome.
Past weekend, the 2024 drive-through rabies clinic was held on April 27th at Pleasant Grove Park. There was 315 dogs and cats vaccinated that day. Again, another good day with FSPCA out there and a lot of volunteers that assisted. I know, I think the doctor's name was Dr. Starkey. And I know Deputy ACO Strong was out there as well, so you can see the cars just looped all the way back around the whole part of the Pleasant Grove Park, but like I said, another good event for the county.
So SPCA brings in a doctor, a vet for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And is that volunteer from him, do you know?
I believe it is. I don't know what the arrangement is with them. Again, I think it's a $10 fee to do all that, so I don't know what type of arrangement the doctor has with them. I believe it's volunteer, but don't quote me on that.
Thank you.
Also, the Virginia Department of Forestry completed their prescribed burn. It's for the area right next to the soccer parking. They did that on April 30th. And so if you kind of go back by the soccer fields just past there, just off to the right, there's a kind of a field right next to the parking area. So that's where they did the burn. It was postponed twice previously due to humidity. And so, like I said, you know, thanks to Tyler Hill, who led the prescribed burn, and all the foresters that helped to get job done. You can see some pictures of before, during, and after the burn took place. And again, this just helps to keep the meadows and the wildlife in good form for us, just Mother Nature in general.
Would there have been still I'm not a fire guy, so excuse my naiveness here. Would there have still been like smoke coming up from that today? Because I was out today and saw a big smoke.
I don't think
there was any prescribed burns going on.
They had two other prescribed burns in the county today.
Okay.
One was, I think, Hell's Bend, and I'm not sure where the other one was.
Okay.
I think it was Troyer.
Yeah.
So it might have been it's not from us.
I took a long detour on the way home trying to find it just to see.
Yeah. And another one today. almost into the fire season.
Yeah.
So they got to get them done this week.
Okay.
And then a couple ribbon cuttings. So spotlight on business. One, Bunker Bistro. Lake Monticello has a private organization now kind of operating out of the old bistro there by the golf course. So Bunker Bistro will have a ribbon cutting May 14th at 11 a.m. And happy to welcome them. And then also Papa Jim's Ice Cream. I'm sure everyone knows who Papa Jim's Ice Cream is. Again, he's having a ribbon cutting for his new location, May 17th at 4 p.m. New location is at 265 Turkey Sag Trail, kind of near the shopping center by Villanova's and Asian Cafe and all that. And some upcoming meetings. So our meeting on May 15th is a 7 p.m. regular meeting. That'll be here in the Performing Arts Center. Remember, starting in June and July, our meetings, just due to the way that our agreement with the Fluvanna Arts Council works, we will be in the library for the months of June and July for our meetings.
6 p.m.?
What's that?
Can we switch to 6 p.m.?
Yes. No, the first, hold on here, I'm sorry. Yes, that second one should say 6 p.m.
Everybody's like, thanks, Tim Hodge.
Hey, when you get to bed before midnight, you'll thank me.
Yeah.
Let's see.
There's one other thing I was going to say about that before I left. Yeah, so yes, Wednesday, June 15th, 5 p.m. regular meeting. Wednesday, June 19th, 6 p.m. regular meeting. A couple things with that. I'm still trying to arrange for the third solar work session. And so I've got some emails out to folks and kind of waiting to coordinate. I put two dates out there for June 5th and June 19th. If we did a June 5th solar work session, we would do it at 7 p.m. If we did one on June 19th, I would propose to do it at 4:30. So again, we'd have 4:30 to 6, that hour and a half to do the work session, and then at 6 p.m. the regular meeting would start.
Just to clarify, it would be Thursday, June 20th, right?
It's
yes.
Yes.
I'm sorry, guys.
Okay.
It's all on me. I will fix them.
I'll blame Tim.
I'll fix them. I'm sorry.
Yes, June. Yes.
I just want to make sure since it was up there.
You're absolutely right.
You're 100% correct. Thursday, June 20th. Yes. And those are the dates that we apologize for the confusion.
No problem.
And at what time?
For which one?
June 20th.
6 p.m. The regular meetings would be at 6 p.m. If we did the solar work session, like I'm trying to see who's available. So I would propose to do it at 4:30. So we'd have from 4:30 to 6, and then move into our regular meeting at 6 p.m.
Yeah.
And so right now we've got outreach to Farm Bureau, to Dominion Energy, to Cooperative Extension, and I reached out to one additional person. It was recommended from Ms. Kilpatrick. I think she threw out a name at the last Planning Commission meeting. Aaron Berryhill, he's kind of the solar program manager from the Virginia Department of Energy. So seeing if we can get those four or some combination thereof.
And we'd have to structure when you have four different entities speaking.
Well, I put four out to see, and like I said, I mean, worst case scenario, I mean, you instead of each one having a half an hour, it could be 20 minutes each. Like I said, I'm not sure if everyone's going to be available, so I wanted to put at least one additional person in the mix and see what we can do. So I'll have more updates from the boards on dates and times for that.
Okay.
And be happy to answer any questions.
With no questions, we will go to first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, please come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Anyone wishing to speak? Seeing none, we will move on to appointments. And I have my board packet open. So we'll move on to appointments, Mr. Dahl.
Yep. So I just wanted to provide one bit of clarity. Spoke to Mr. Fairchild before, and this is just kind of for the public's knowledge. So there's a question of, you know, was a planning commissioner retiring, or not retiring, was dropping off. So when we've got new appointments coming on, even though they may be requesting to be reappointed, anyone that has been submitted an application for that position, we automatically notify them. Because again, the board could say we don't want to select the incumbent. That has been the practice. The board has always selected the incumbent. But we also notify everyone else that has an application to make sure that they are still interested.
Okay.
Whether someone is reapplying to be or selecting to be reappointed or not.
So that the one I asked you about was for a June appointment.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
And so what Ms. Solis does, she notifies everyone that has an application in.
I see.
And again, you know, Mr. Bibb, the question was specific to Mr. Bibb. And so, no, he's certainly selecting to be reappointed.
Gotcha.
But the board could say we want to appoint someone else. So we notify everyone else and let them know that, you know, this term's coming up, and certainly they can put their hats in, and then it's up to the board to determine if they want to select the incumbent who wants to be reappointed or not.
And that's Palmyra in June too, correct?
Yes.
I think Howard told me he was up in June as well.
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
And so this one's for Bree, who vacated.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Just to clarify.
Yep. So I just wanted to provide some clarification on how
Thank you.
Works with the boards and stuff like that. So yeah, so we've got Ms. Bree Key. She had to step down. She had some job changes, and because of that, we got the Rivanna District representative up. We had the advertisement out for over 30 days, and we have six appointees who are putting their hats in for that appointment. And like I said, happy to open up any applications. And I see we have one. I know I saw at least two. Three. I think we have three of the appointees or the appointees here to speak. So I don't know if you want to start with those first, Mr. Chair.
Sure. If anybody who would like to come up and have something to say who's an appointee, I'll just do them in order of the list. You don't have to, but we'll start with Bob Dorsey.
Well, good evening. My name is Bob Dorsey. I live at 6 Dover Court in the Rivanna District. And I threw my hat in the ring because the community asked me to. And also because I had the privilege of attending several Planning Commission meetings and seeing the important ways that they shape both the policy aspects of zoning. They shape the planning aspects of zoning with their planning studies, and they shape the very practical aspects of individual citizens who appear requesting exemptions to those rules for particular projects. And in my past, I've served in various government and institutional roles. Forgive my appearance, I was on tennis courts at the high school literally less than 15 minutes ago. And it's hot out there. And I was playing doubles with our numbers 1 through 3 Lady Flucos, and they're good. So they're running me around pretty good. So I think I would ask, I've served in very, very large homeowners associations in Northern Virginia, one called Wellington. And I was the chair of a covenants committee up there for decades. So covenants committee sets policies for what people can build and not build inside a homeowners association, and then listens to homeowners when they come and say, hey, I want to do this, and it's not quite in compliance with the rules. What do you think? So it's a similar kind of function in that aspect of impacting individual citizens. So I've kind of been in that bucket before. I'm not really sure what it is that you would be interested in knowing, other than a willingness to serve, some experience in the area, been in the county for 20 years.
If that's good with you, it's good with us.
Okay.
You know, he's coaching the women's tennis team.
Coaching the women's tennis team?
Yes.
Well, not a surprise.
Woody Fincham.
Yeah, I don't think I see Woody Fincham here.
Yeah. Here, you sell it?
Hi all, my name is Gary Selleck. Live at 8 Dipoff Road in the Lake. Good afternoon, thank you for your service, particularly on this glorious day. Your commitment to your county is greatly appreciated. I've already emailed you much of what I'm about to say, as this is a period of public comment and as many in the county may not know me, let me introduce myself to them and to you all again. I'm an applicant for the vacant chair representing Ravana District on the County Planning Commission. I'm currently employed at Monticello, working as a documentary editor for the Thomas Jefferson Foundation. Specifically, I'm a research historian and fact checker on a team turning Jefferson's writings into books. In my spare time, I coach soccer for FYSA, hence my outfit today. I'm going to coach immediately after this. And I volunteer at the Fluvanna Historical Society. Perhaps most pertinent to this position, I've served on the board of the Lake Monticello Owners Association for the past 4 years. I'm its current vice president. In this position, I've been intimately connected to the plans regarding development around the lake and within the lake itself, often helping to review lake positions in favour and against proposals being debated both within the lake itself and by the Planning Commission. For the past year, I've been the board liaison for the lake's Community Development Committee, and as such, I've received monthly updates on the proposals before the Commission and have heard how members of our community engage with those topics. In turn, I've also attended several meetings of the Commission in my role as director and viewed others in an unofficial capacity. So I believe I understand the role of the Commission and the commitment should my proposal be, or my nomination be accepted. During my service on the board and whilst volunteering in the county, after graduating as a member of Class 17 of the Fluvanna Leadership Development Programme, I've seen the divide that exists between this within the county. So I'm fortunate that many residents of Lake Monticello do not consider themselves true members of Fluvanna County. And many in the county living outside NOOA view the lake and its residents with suspicion also. I believe that I can help bridge this divide, and I hope for your support in my application to join the Planning Commission. If you guys have any questions for me, I'll gladly answer them.
She's got a funny accent.
I do have a funny accent. Yeah, I'm not from here originally, but I've lived in the county for 7 years now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Eddie Schifflin, oh, I think Eddie had to work tonight. He had called me, and he works in ambulance, and his own shift work, he couldn't get on. Ravindra Singh?
I know the last one is here, David Wells.
David Wells?
Good evening, members of the esteemed board. I think I know most of y'all. Mr. Goode, I don't think I've had the pleasure of meeting yet, but I think I've worked with a lot of y'all in the past. It's always awkward to go after one of my other board members. I spoke on a thing, so I may have a job tomorrow, I may not. We'll see how this goes. For those who don't know, let me introduce myself real quick. I've been in the Ravana District since 2008. I served at the Sheriff's Office for 17 years until I retired 2 years ago to take a position with Lake Monticello as the Director of Public Safety, which also oversees our ECC environmental control function. So we have that. Spent 27 years totally in law enforcement, graduate of the FBI's National Academy. When I was with the Sheriff's Office and even with my role at Lake Monticello, I've served on the Transportation Review Committee, alongside the Technical Review Committee, under the Planning Commission to talk about public safety related issues. Worked with Doug Miles quite a bit on various projects throughout the years. I was a member of the CARE Task Force. That was a Columbia Area Revitalization Effort Task Force for a number of years to help kind of clean that up. Worked with the former county attorney on probably 3 to 4 different county ordinance changes, helping write them, propose them, try to see what's about. I say all that to say I've been around the county for a while. I have some experience with policy and planning. I have some experience with interpreting the codes. I'm by no means a zoning expert. I don't have a degree in planning, but I have a pretty good understanding, I think, of what the county is looking for. I've been involved in some of the previous projects as far as James River Water Authority. I remember the original pipeline that was supposed to go down 15. Now we all wish we probably did that back then at a much cheaper rate when it had water. So I think I bring a lot to the table that's unique just based on my experiences. I guess that's it in a nutshell. Wrote me a few notes, but I think I covered all that. And, you know, I think one of the key things to consider with development is, you know, logical, balanced growth. You know, we're a rural county with a somewhat suburban section, which is the Ravana District. You know, it's a very unique district. It's probably the only district that's 100% on private property. It's also the only district that's plowing an entire bowl, which takes all the water runoff. I've learned way more about erosion and water and sediment control and fire flows over the years, and sewage. Let's not forget aqua and our sewage issues and our infrastructure issues that have plagued the county as far as trying to get commercial development that might bring in some non-personal property and non-real estate taxes. You know, so we want to make sure we focus with our comp plan on residential development where it needs to be without excess, because, you know, residential development always carries a cost to it. We want to make sure that doesn't affect the taxpayer negatively. We want to affect the most taxpayers in the most positive manner and not worry about the developers quite as much. Now, if there's a need for it, then we see that need. But, you know, we want to balance everything out, and that's kind of a hard approach, because I've also learned over the years that for 50% that want something this way, there's another 50% that want it the exact and polar opposite way. So we've had to realize we can't make everybody happy, but I think we have to look at the totality of circumstances and the big picture as what's going to be the best for the most people in the county. So that's my stump speech. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer. But
questions?
Oh, how much do you like your job?
I got a retirement check coming in, so worst case scenario, I guess I'll be okay.
Your accent is nowhere near as good as his.
I think he's got a lovely accent, and it's we'll make one for the comments. So.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Anybody want to start a conversation?
Well, I know all of the applicants. I don't know Mr. Singh very well, but certainly spoke and met with many of them over the years. And you know, I can't say that there's one person on here that is not qualified and couldn't do a great job. You know, my personal feeling and thoughts is that Mr. Selleck brings a balance that we don't have right now, which is that closeness between the Lake Board and the County Board, as well as I think that he's being a little bit younger and having a little different perspective might be a good balance to the board as well too. So I would like to nominate him, but I'm certainly open to other discussion.
I mean, I think once again one of these things where I've sat here before and we are scratching our heads trying to find people to fill positions. Now we're getting six people who are qualified. If I had to lean one way or another, I mean, I know several of these guys really well. Two of them, some of the kids refer to us as twins when we're out there at the school system. Two of us, and no.
I can see it.
Mr. Rose, it's not you. In spite of this, but I just, when I look at it, I see the experience that Mr. Wells brings. That's the only thing that I would say might lean in his direction, just being involved with the county so much over the past few years. And that's, I don't have a dog in this one. I'm on the other side of the river.
Mm-hmm. So I also know most of them and agree with what you both said. David, I've, you know, of course seen his service in the community for all these years, and to go then from the Sheriff's Department to serving at Lake Monticello. Bob, I know is committed to the county and service. Eddie, I know, and I didn't know Eddie until being on the board, and he started engaging me during each budget season, and I've spent each budget season quite a bit of time talking to him. And always been impressed with what he brings to the table, both in what he helps me understand with fire rescue regarding the budget, and then he talks to me with some regularity about broader subjects. And he had brought it to my attention a little while ago that he had interest in eventually being on this. But then, you know, David had applied, I think, last year or 2 years ago.
Last time we did this,
yeah,
he had applied for it, I think. That's when it picked up the box check.
Yeah. So, again, definitely great options. Eddie's the one I've talked with the most about it and for the longest. But y'all have any thoughts?
I know you've spent some time talking to the folks, and I know Tim probably had some thoughts. I'm kind of like Mr. Sheridan. I'm a little, you guys are a little bit closer over there to that side of the county than I am, so depends on where you're at in Fort Kingdon District. Yeah. Now, if we're talking Fort Kingdon proper.
All right.
So I'll turn it over to Mr. Hodge.
Yeah, I know most of them also. When I was looking through, as you can tell, I've read the packets and scrutinized them. And there, to me, there were two that stood out, and I noticed Eddie's and David's both. I serve with Dave Wells on the Social Services Board. I've worked with him in the Sheriff's Office. I've also known Eddie through Fire Rescue, and like Chris, I've had extensive discussions with him, not just about fire rescue stuff, but on ideas, you know, things, developments in the county when projects were coming in, whether it was Tractor Supply or the apartment stuff and the development over on Lake Monticello Road and the water sewer. So I've had deep discussions with him. I am cognizant that, you know, people have jobs and other stuff. And one of them I asked, you know, when I talk to people, do you understand the commitment that goes with this? Everything we do in the county, there's some level of commitment, and we want to make sure we submit the most committed people forward, and Eddie seemed to have the most available free time to commit to this. So that kind of lent a little bit in my favor. Someone looking for something to do, looking to use his time. So in the two-horse race, I feel I would edge him out on that one for the time, availability, and knowledge.
Well, it is my district, so I'll make the motion. And I would like to nominate Mr. Gary Selleck to serve on the Planning Commission for the term of 5/1/2024 to 6/30/2026. I don't disagree with anything that anybody else has said, but I do feel like anyone would serve well, but I think that the youth and energy and diversity of experience would do the county well as the liaison between the two boards. I think is a really significant, important feature. I believe that the remaining candidates all bring strengths individually, and you know, I can't say that any one of them would do a bad job by any means, but I think that this is, you know, we have a board at the Planning Commission that could benefit from you, in my opinion.
So there was a motion?
That's a motion.
Okay. So we have a motion, we have a second. Do not have a second, so the motion fails.
I move the Board of Supervisors appoint Eddie Shiflett.
Do you have a second?
I'll second.
I have a motion from Mr. Hodge, a second from Mr. Goad. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm not against it, but I find it irregular that the supervisor from the district isn't even given a second for his vote, so I just...
Yeah. A second.
He's not even given a second for his vote. I find that very irregular.
It passes. So since you got three of you, I'll vote with it. So passes. You. What did you say? What
said
did
no.
Okay. Passes 4-1. All right, and thank you all for stepping up to serve. Next item, share the air, Mr. Spitzer.
It's done.
Oh.
going to actually present for you.
All right.
Okay. You want to go up on the back?
Come on, give me the poll. Let's see what's going on.
Deal.
And when you want me to go to the next slide, just say next slide.
So if you all will, introduce yourselves.
Hello, I am Nilab Sultan. I'm part of Charlesville High School. I am a sophomore at Charlesville High School, and I've been part of White Street for 2 years.
Hello, my name is Bene, and I am from Charlesville High School, and I have been a member of White Street for 2 years, and I'm a junior. Thank you for coming today to learn more about Share the Air. Your time and your interest to help create a healthier Virginia is appreciated and not taken for granted. Y Street is the Virginia Foundation for Healthy Youth's statewide team-led initiative. Y Street encourages high school students across Virginia to make their communities healthier by reducing tobacco use and promoting obesity prevention efforts. Y Street partners with high schools across the Commonwealth to train youth on how to become effective advocates.
If you can please move on to the next slide.
Since our communities have successfully advocated for tobacco-free school environments through our campaign 24/7 Virginia, with the passing of the Comprehensive Tobacco-Free Schools Bill in 2019, Y Street is continuing to promote policies that prevent youth tobacco use by supporting 100% tobacco-free and e-cigarette-free outdoor recreational areas with our campaign Share the Air. Share the Air's primary goal is to create 100% tobacco-free and e-cigarette-free outdoor public spaces such as parklands, playgrounds, and trails. The parkland and recreational community and county leaders can lead the charge in establishing tobacco-free and vapor-free outdoor recreational areas through voluntary policy adoption. We are hoping that you will partner with Share the Air by updating your park rules to include comprehensive tobacco-free and e-cigarette-free outdoor policies.
Next slide, please.
Tobacco products account for almost 40% of all littered items in the nation, making them the most littered item in the United States. Maintenance to clean up litter can be costly. The Virginia Department of Transportation reported spending over $3.5 million per year just to pick up roadside litter in the state of Virginia. Another reason to consider going tobacco and e-cigarette free is that parks and recreational centers serve as key areas for creating and promoting healthy communities. Oftentimes, these areas are viewed as pillars of health in a community and can be the catalyst for creating healthier lifestyles in residents. Building programs and a community around safe environments and positive childhood experiences is critical, and reducing exposure to adverse effects like tobacco can play a strong part in this. Other recent events have highlighted the dangers of these products as well.
Next slide, please. So what does a comprehensive tobacco-free and e-cigarette-free outdoor policy mean? It means promoting no tobacco and electronic smoking device use in all outdoor recreational areas at all times, posting tobacco-free and e-cigarette-free signs in visible prominent locations, notifying staff and volunteers about the tobacco-free and e-cigarette-free policy, and announcing and posting the policy to inform your communities. Can we move on to the next slide, please? Thank you. Over the course of 4 years, we have received a ton of support from Virginians, with over 7,000 support cards collected. Data collected from community members through our on-the-ground efforts show that 94% of Virginians believe that cigarettes, empty e-cigarette pods, and vaping cartridges are litter and are not biodegradable and are toxic to humans and animals. 90% of Virginians agree that tobacco litter negatively impacts their outdoor experience, and 96% of Virginians are in favor of our tobacco-free outdoor policy. As you can see, a strong majority of Virginians support Share the Air and its policies. And the reason why Share the Air is important to me personally is that someone who loves enjoying the outdoors with family and friends, it's important to me and my peers that we have a safe environment for us and everyone at the park as well to enjoy their time.
Yes, having tobacco and e-cigarette-free public outdoor areas is extremely important to me as I have younger siblings and a pet dog. From our grassroots advocacy efforts and the support of communities, 20 localities across the Commonwealth have adopted our campaign's model policy and have gone 100% tobacco-free and vapor-free. As a result of their efforts, over 1 million Virginians are now protected from exposure to secondhand smoke and vape aerosol. We're hoping to add you to the map. We encourage you to visit our website and download the map to share the good news with others and explore the free resources that our partners have at their fingertips. Here are some direct quotes from our partners sharing the positive impact of making their parklands and outdoor recreational areas tobacco-free and partnering with the campaign. We're grateful for the commitment to creating a healthy and safe environment for their visitors. Parks and Recreational Coordinator from Ashland stated that this program, being very low cost and low barrier, was the perfect way to start initiatives in our town that help improve the quality of life for our citizens, not just our residents, but our visitors as well. Next slide, please. The Share the Air campaign is here to serve as a resource to make the process as light a lift as possible for you. Once you adopt our tobacco-free and e-cigarette-free outdoor policy by signing our commitment form, we provide free signage that you can post in designated areas. Next slide, please. We also provide a free toolkit which includes our model policy, checklist, and implementation and communication resources all in one place for you to use. We further help with positive media news attention and help create customized images for ads, and we can help promote your tobacco-free policy on the Share the Air website and social media channels. We want to publicly promote and celebrate your decision to go tobacco-free and vapor-free and make sure you get the recognition you deserve for promoting clean and healthy outdoor environments. And just to wrap it up, we would like to ask you follow-up questions. Is a tobacco-free and e-cigarette-free policy something that can be adopted unilaterally by your local parks and recreation department, or are there other individuals who should be involved in this process, such as council members?
Dan, you want to chime in on the...
Sure. So basically, you know, Virginia is a Dillon Rule state. So the last time I researched this, you can have a policy that asks people to refrain from smoking, but we can't attach a fine or a penalty to it. So I believe that's still the current law in the state of Commonwealth of Virginia, but I can research that and see if there's been anything that's changed since I last researched it.
Yes, and to my knowledge, we would, for the signage posted, it would not be a law to where like they would get fined. It's more of a promotional advertisement to where we can help promote this area, and so the community members are aware of this policy that's passed and are aware that this is something that the community has pressed forward as something that they would like to not have.
Sure, something like that is allowed. When I worked for Narrow Locality, we had language similar to that to all of our parks, and actually used the language that was for Fairfax County, and believe something like, we believe in a healthy, clean environment, we ask that you refrain from smoking. We had signs posted at all the parks in the locality. So you can do something like that. You just can't have a fine.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And if engaged with, do you foresee these individuals having any specific questions or concerns related to a tobacco-free and e-cigarette-free outdoor policy?
I mean, I think if you're talking about, and I don't know, was it a policy that was adopted, or was it just more?
It was just signage. It was just signage. The Parks and Rec Department.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, certainly Mr. Spitzer, and then if the board wants to implement something like that, yeah, I think who you have in this room here would be able to answer your questions for you and be part of that.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to the next slide, please.
Next slide.
Thank you. And I would like to wrap it up and thank you for allowing us to share with you all today about our 100% tobacco-free and e-cigarette-free outdoor spaces. And we would like to open up the floor to any questions.
Questions? No, not really, other than thank you for taking your time out and giving this presentation to us. It's appreciated, and it's a very noble cause.
And are you all going around to other surrounding counties as well doing similar?
Yes, we're a statewide program, so we have multiple different schools that have already accepted this policy with like their areas. But yes, we have multiple different counties and cities that we do promote this to have this policy passed.
And have you two been making the presentations around here to others?
I believe they're formulated by our statewide programs. We do have a head of like board that helps create these. These are the outlines, but we do practice in advance for these and help come to these meetings from different areas in Virginia.
Is this the first time y'all have done this, or have y'all done others?
I've been part about four before, in person and online on like Zoom meetings.
And this is my first one.
Well, you did an excellent job.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, a number of years ago at the softball field, we posted signs up that said no smoking, and I now understand, and we were told we couldn't have them up, and I've never associated that with the Dillon rule, but we're told we had to put them down, but you can ask, you're saying, though, right?
You can say, like, we value, you know, a clean, healthy environment. We ask that you refrain from smoking within 100 feet, 200 feet of the ball fields. That was the language I drafted when I was in our locality.
So the bands that are in government buildings and the courthouses, that's a statewide ban or a national?
Well, inside buildings, that's totally different. That's state law. You're allowed to ban inside educational facilities. And there's a whole list of facilities.
Do we allow them to vape in the high school? I mean, just a question. I don't
You're
know.
Saying in the high school?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
That's not allowed.
It's not allowed. Doesn't it happen sometimes?
Probably.
Well, if it is.
Did they still have a smoking section when you were in high school, Chris? Was it true?
They did when I was.
I don't
know. No, you're too young for that.
Oh, yes, they did.
They got rid of it. I don't know if they had a smoking section, but I had a left guard that was nicknamed Sick Man.
Yeah.
He smoked two packs a day when he was a senior.
I think he just went to the bathroom.
I don't want to answer
like
that.
I
love you, Larry. That's all I'm going to say. You had my back.
It might be something we want to consider doing some.
I think the verbiage that you talked about would be appropriate.
I can pull up the language I drafted.
And is this just for county property? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can't do it anywhere else, but we can put it up on county
property. Maybe a Pleasant Grove Park, close to around the ball field.
I think we have somebody who would like to say something.
Hi, I'm Tabitha Magalbet. I am the program supervisor for Y Street and our campaign Share the Air. And I just wanted to add to what our Y Street members just shared with you, is that with the tobacco-free and vapor-free outdoor policy, it's completely voluntary, and we do have resources for you here that has our commitment form that we ask partners to sign, and we can definitely make any kind of modifications or revisions to meet you where you are. So I just wanted to add that note. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, so if it's something the board wants us to look into, to consider, we can certainly do that and bring that back to the board.
It wouldn't be a bad thing.
No. I mean, especially around youth ball fields and all.
It's not going to cost a whole lot.
No, I mean, it sounds like there's resources for the signage and everything. So,
okay.
I mean, you know, there would be some indirect costs for probably
installation,
but that's probably the bulk of it.
Yeah.
Mr. Pitcher needs another job.
I think it sounds like we're in favor of.
Mr. Spitzer has a form, so he'll get that to me.
There's packets for each board member.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'll give it to Caitlin, and then
I'll
give it to you.
Thank
then.
You.
Good. All right.
All right. Moving on to item C, Board of Supervisors 2-year plan update. Ms. Harris.
Good evening.
Evening.
I want to say that there was still a smoking court when I was in high school, which I did not use. So good evening. In response to our last meeting and Mr. Hodges' request that we have an update, I had actually had it on my list of things to do and hadn't gotten there yet. So thank you for the reminder. And I don't think there's anybody in the room any happier than I am that our new planning director is here. So
you
that
did a
is,
great job.
Oh, no pressure. But yeah. So as in years past, for members of the board who have been here before, this was actually a little bit different. Normally, the strategic initiatives by the board were adopted somewhere near the beginning of whatever year that was in an election year. We were a little bit later getting this set of goals. I think this was August. The leadership retreat was in August of 2022. These were adopted in September of 2022. So not a full 2 years, even though we called it the 2-year plan. And please feel free to call it anything that you would like. As I have said so many times, everybody's probably here sick of hearing me say it, our former strategic initiatives were neither strategic nor initiatives. So whatever you would like to call it, I'm happy to put that there. The list is a little bit shorter than the last time I did this. So I will not be speaking as quickly as those two ladies were, so this might be just a little bit longer presentation. Jumping into our service delivery, Actually, let me back up and just say, is there anything that jumped out at you as a particular item that you wanted to talk about, or would you like me to run down through the list to give a little bit of an update on each one?
It's an interesting question, especially to me, I guess, because the first thing on the list is something that I would want to, that does jump out at me, that I would want to talk about. So
let's start there. And so that item is to work with the Fire and Rescue Association to identify support options for fire and rescue volunteers. So a few years ago, I think back in FY 19, one or the other, money had been allocated for some sort of volunteer event to recognize, and then COVID. That, of course, pulled everything out that we would have done that was of a gathering sort of nature. And for one reason or another, those funds did not carry through into the next budget year. So there has not been money allocated in the last few years for such an event. As part of the way that I will do these updates, I just reach out to the departments and the folks in the department to say, hey, do you have an update for me? And when I asked Mr. True, did he have any updates for me, he went into big time action and said, hey, we can do this and we can do that. And when would you like to do it? And I can do it by May 19th. How about that? And that seemed really quick. And oh my goodness, maybe we will. But two of the things that came up was to do a picnic. There's a little bit of logistics around that. And then the second thing, are you here, Jim?
Yeah.
Can I mention this part?
Sure.
Okay. And then the more practical part that we can do a little quickly is to issue a challenge coin to all of the volunteers for fire and rescue as a thank you, as a memento. So those are the two things that are out there. Of course, they do cost money. And so that would be some fine tuning of how we get to that. But those are the two items that were instantly
Let me add also, I mean, certainly too, I know in the budget there is also some money out there for one, we talked about some type of
incentive,
whether it's like some type of dollar amount for personal property, and that's, I know Mr. Witten has looked at that a little bit on what is allowable, and I think really it's a matter of, we determined that what can be done is basically providing a discount to the tax rate, not necessarily provide a set dollar amount. We're going to give every person a credit of X.
Correct. I don't believe there's no enroll authority for the voucher system that Almerall's putting in. It's not in the county code. It's just something that's been done for years. And so looking at all the other localities in Virginia, the more common system is the lower tax rate. And so that's the system I would recommend.
And y'all all know what is done now, right? And I don't know if you do or not.
No.
We get a free county decal. It used to be a free county decal, but now we don't get the $33 bill.
You know, yeah, on personal property.
One vehicle. Too. We get to pick a vehicle and say, okay, we don't get a decal fee for that.
They've done that.
And that's, and I will say with the picnics and stuff of that nature, every company has an awards banquet. I believe so. Everybody always does something individually. We just don't do anything where we have everybody together.
And so we have, there's some money out there for some type of reduction or discount for whatever that
we
looks like.
I can't remember what the money.
It's like 37.
Budget.
I think 37.5. I think is the amount. And we also have money outstanding there too, as an incentive also for a cancer policy, I believe.
That's something we can.
And again, both of those really requires, everyone kind of to be on the same page for what is the metric and who qualifies for that. Is it someone that is, because there's a lot of volunteers in the county, but what degree of volunteer are you? Are you actually, doing some type of set hours per week? Are you doing 24 hours per week? Are you fighting fires? Are you doing EMS calls? Does it open up to the more wide range of volunteers? Do you include like auxiliary and stuff like that? So I think those are some of the things that need
you
to be
determined. You have life members, you have auxiliary members, you have.
That's why I think they were looking at like on the fire side, percentage of calls on the rescue side and duty crews, and on the rescue side you have duty crews, but there tends to be 12-hour shifts. The ultimate goal of this is to keep us in a position where we have a healthy volunteer force so that we don't have to put paid crews in place that will cost us large amounts of money. So, I mean, it's a small expense to save a large expense.
Be several more zeros on that 37.5.
It would be.
There'd be a couple more zeros on that.
Yes.
We had to go pay fire department.
Yeah, and like Mike said, you know, the sticker fee, it's negligible. You know, if we just, by ordinance, adopted a separate lower tax rate to be applied, that the chiefs put the letter in for the people. I think it should be active members who are currently running. Not saying that the previous contributions of life members aren't any less important, but we're where we're at today, and it's the people volunteering today that are keeping us from having to put the paid crews in place.
Yeah, I think it's a two-part thing here. The first part would be obviously some sort of incentive that's not there now. Is a break on one vehicle on your personal property taxes going to incentivize people to sign up more so? I don't know. I don't know if there's research out there that would suggest that, or if there's a dollar, but I think it would potentially, the people that are volunteering now, maybe induce them to, if they're not responding quite as much, and I'm not trying to say anything bad about whoever responds, you're volunteering, whatever you're doing. I do think there's an incentive piece to this, but I also think there's a principle piece to this of they are volunteering their time and doing something. You know, the sticker thing kind of goes away, but even still, that was only a $33 value. I think this does put some teeth to say, hey, we appreciate what you're doing. So I think there's a two-part piece. There's the incentive piece, and there's also we support you type piece here. I understand that there's been some some disagreements about, you know, Dan, I think the reason we talked about a uniform rate was because there were some concerns in the past. From what I understand, that, you know, what if someone has a vehicle that's valued more than another? They're technically getting a higher you know, rate,
a higher discount than someone else.
Yeah. So you're saying state law wouldn't let us say just a flat rate number, $100 per volunteer?
The state law says you can create it as a different classification. You can charge a different rate, but it does say you can cap it, or you can say, you know, it's only up to $20,000 in value.
Mm-hmm.
And we could request an attorney general opinion. But the way I read the state code section, every other locality we've researched other than Amarillo did a lower rate.
So
cap it or give a voucher.
The one thing I will add is the amount that's in there right now, 37.5, that was based upon a flat amount. And so I am certain if you went to some type of rate reduction model, I don't think the 37.5 would probably cover what would be needed. And again, I'm not even sure how we would.
In some counties, it's like a dollar. Some counties, it's 10 cents. Some counties, it's 1 cent. It's all over the place, the rate. It's just lower than the normal.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm trying to get at is I'm not sure how we would know what that amount really is, because you don't really know until the people say, okay, well, I'm putting this car in there. And so whether you got a $1,000 vehicle and you're getting the, what to say, it's a 5 cent reduction in your personal property tax,
yeah,
or you got a $40,000 vehicle and you're getting a 5 cent reduction in your personal property tax, you know, largely different amounts. And two, I just think the 37.5 will not cover that if that's the route that we go.
Could we, in order not to get bogged down here, have Mr. Whitten research what it would look like that we need to enact to do this? And then task the FRA at their next meeting,
yeah,
to pull what their numbers would be for in the fire companies, 10% of all calls, or in the instance of Lake Monticello, because there's so many of them and they only run one 12-hour shift a week, for them to be 200 plus hours in a year. And each of the chiefs can pull those numbers relatively simply, relatively easily.
And just to clarify, Mr. Hodge, you said what's the metric we want to try?
So 10% of all calls,
okay,
for fire. And then because Lake Monticello Rescue is different and they run a higher volume, then it'd be something like 200 plus hours.
I mean, if we still had Flu Vanna volunteer rescue squad.
Yeah.
They would be the same way. The rescue squad is just different than the fire department.
Yeah.
We don't stay up there for 12 hours.
No.
Yeah.
And it's harder for them to get 10% of the calls. For the fire, it's a different story. You've got fires, motor vehicle accidents, and lift assist. And
are we going to come up with the things, or are we going to let the chiefs come up with the things?
I said let them bring the numbers forward, and then we can get an idea of the cost. And then
But that's what I'm saying, bring the numbers forward. But we're putting numbers out there, and we've talked about these.
But
I'm saying, should we leave it up to them to come up and say, hey, well, here's the numbers, here's what we can do? Because
I'm open to hearing any bit of suggestion from them.
That's what I'm saying. We can throw out numbers, but I would allow them to just say, hey, we think that's spot on, here's what our numbers are.
But I think we're getting into some of the conversation we would be having if we did the retreat.
Yeah.
I think we're getting a little deep in
there. Yeah, correct. I mean, on this one, I guess what we can do is we can request, kind of going back to if the board is comfortable with that, we can request from the FRA to bring forward some numbers for what was discussed, just to kind of keep things moving along.
We need to talk to the Commissioner of Revenue also, since he does the prorate.
Yeah.
How would he handle that? Would he give a refund? Would it be effective January 1st? There's some details we need to talk to the Commissioner of Revenue about as well.
I'm telling you, you're getting a deal, because my son just drives my truck around. So he wouldn't even have to.
I don't know what it takes to get an opinion from the AG's office. I mean, it seemed to me that it would be easier to do this and more equitable, I think, if there was a flat rate such as Albemarle does. They've been non-conforming. I don't know how they've gotten away with it for so long.
I can reach out to their county attorney's office. I was at a conference. I talked to their deputy county attorney about Aqua, because it wasn't like much else. I didn't get a chance to talk to him about this, but I can reach out to him, and he's been there for 20 years, so I can talk to him and see if they've ever researched it. Maybe he has research that says they can do it.
And I know you got a lot of big fish to fry, so as we just continue this conversation.
I did reach out to the Commissioner of Revenue's office in Albemarle. They said that it's never been in the code. It's just always been something that's been done. So they didn't have any information on it.
Okay.
Talked to their office.
Okay. Next one, Ms. Harris.
I jumped ahead of myself, and I wanted to preface all of this by saying, when we talk about what's been completed and what hasn't been completed yet, it becomes a little bit difficult when things become just operational. So sometimes the initiative is completed, but it has become part of operations. So I was supposed to preface everything by saying that. A2, perform comprehensive review of existing partnerships with local area support and nonprofit groups providing services to Flovana residents, review service gaps, and identify needed partnerships. This has not been done.
Just one thing with that. Would the board want to have an advisory committee of some sort of volunteers to look at that?
Are you talking about A1?
A2.
It's
a thought. It'd have to be a diverse group. I think it should be a diverse group that has differing opinions on the validity or need for some of these, and it could be hard to figure out the right group to put together on that.
And again, we don't have that. We can maybe discuss this as we talk about the next retreat, but that's just one thing that I see. That would probably be the way to go. I know other localities do something similar to look at that, but that's probably the best way to look at that.
I've been told the city of Charlottesville created some sort of committee that vets. We're talking about.
I think Albemarle. I think like Albemarle does too. So there are some others that do that.
To me, that's what we did during the budget process, and we've done a lot of it. We don't lay it down side by side and see what overlaps, but we talk about it with each and every group. So, I mean, part of it we've gotten into. We just don't have a comprehensive
point of
it. Well, like I said, I think that's something.
That's a good idea, though, to look at it.
Ms. Harris, next one, A3.
A3 was to initiate a comprehensive review of traffic throughout the county with a particular focus on high traffic areas around the Lake Monticello community. In September of 2022, it was a really busy meeting, the board signed a letter of support for Safe Streets for All grant with the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, at which time you committed a $30,000 local match. TJPDC applied for and was awarded the grant to develop a comprehensive safety action plan that will meet the eligibility requirements for all six of its member jurisdictions. And I think their RFP has been awarded. I didn't actually get all of the info on that. Also, at that September 21st, 2022 meeting, you adopted a resolution requesting VDOT conduct a safety study on a portion of South Boston Road. I spoke with Scott Thornton about all of the safety studies and speed studies that they had already performed in the county, and I got a really long lesson on what that means to have a safety study or a speed study. There was way more than I could actually recount here. But the gist of it was, through the improvements that they will be making at the South Boston and Lake Monticello Road intersection, they have studied the road all the way back to Broken Island Road. And so that section has been reviewed. They did the drone study not too long ago at the Riverside Gate. That information is available. I do not have it with me tonight, and I'm positive I can get that. But it has been looked at. Recommendations have been made. They might not have been recommendations that were necessarily what we thought we would hear, but they have been done. They've also looked at 53 and probably will not recommend lowering the speed based on the there not being that many speed-related incidents on 53.
Let me just interject one thing on that, because I know, Mr. Hodge, you had asked us about that, and I also spoke to Mr. Thornton, too, about that, because one, the board requests studies. They normally don't come back and provide like an update for that, and we don't normally get any type of report that says, well, here's what the data mm-hmm. shows. I think it just kind of falls into, you know, here's what ends up happening if there is a change. But what I had requested from Mr. Thornton is, I said it would be good to see when these requests come forward, what does the data produce from that? And so he was looking at trying to pull some of those studies together. For instance, the South Boston one, the one you spoke about recently, I know there was one on Route 53 regarding lowering the speed and stuff coming up from Martin King. Again, as Ms. Harris noted, he also relayed to me that the data didn't show that. And remember, when they're looking at data, they're generally looking at data that's 2 years old from when it is. So because it doesn't show it right now, it may be something that happens in the future. But what he had said is he had planned on bringing some of these kind of speed studies and things that were brought to VDOT when he comes to the board, and I think it's the June 5th meeting, he was going to bring some of that information to the board and discuss some of those.
Yeah, and that's why I brought it up, because I distinctly remember last year and the year before, both times I think Mr. Sheridan brought it up about that intersection, and then with the speed being higher and the resident bringing it up, I thought maybe that's something they should look at, and if I bring it up last month, then he has a chance to pull data or whatever.
So,
and we'll see it on the smart scale. So we'll see if the scores are high in that area, yep. Then that would lead us to believe that there are issues.
I just sitting here with us talking, and I know it's because it's their rule. They have to put a sign up when you come out of an intersection going onto a road. If it's a different speed, they have to put a sign there. Mm-hmm. But it boggles the mind that this changes to 45, 150 feet past the intersection rather than 150 feet before the intersection.
You're talking Martin King?
Yes.
Yeah, I said something to him about that. He was going to take a look again, but again, the data.
I don't think it's a lot of accidents that happened there, thank God. But I can tell you right now.
I know, about 8 years ago got an accident there.
I'll let him sit in the seat of that driver's ed car and see if they're pulled up.
Yeah. How many of these items do we have?
We have a lot. Yeah.
We're kind of having our...
Yeah. So we'll cruise on from that, but again, we're going to bring more information back to the board via VDOT.
I can go back to my, you tell me what you want to hear and I'll tell you about it, plan if you'd rather do it that way.
I think that's it. Is there any other items anybody wants to?
Not right off.
The rest of them should be more.
The main reason I brought it up was just so that we've got an eye on this.
Oh, yeah.
We don't do it, and then 2 years later, be like, man, that was a great idea. Why didn't we do something?
No, Ms. Harris will never let that happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we do, and then kind of in the course of just, you know, just general business, you know, the board throws some other things into the mix here a little bit, and so sometimes some of those things become a little bit more of a front and center thing. So, you know, some of these things may end up taking a little bit of a back seat. But again, that's, you know, this is here to kind of guide us, guide the board, and things that we want to look at and accomplish. But yeah, we definitely are taking a look at it. So I'll just kind of flip through a few of these again.
An observation I had on this, and to take the load off of Ms. Harrison yourself, on some of these that can be delegated down to department heads, maybe do that, put a point of contact on the task item, and then we'll set some kind of review cycle where they come before us and give a 10-minute presentation to say, here's why I'm at. That way it's on an individual person's radar rather than on county administration as a whole when you guys are already busy.
Yep. Communication. You know, some of these things under project management, some of these have been completed. You know, master water and sewer plan, that's been completed. We're continuing to look at Palmyra Village streetscape. That project's still kind of ongoing. A few things that VDOT will be providing on that. Lots of things looking at different streetscape options, as we said, for the village. James River Water Authority project, we know that is ongoing. The Zion's Crossroads project, that is basically ongoing. The only reason it doesn't have complete because there's a small little function of punch list items to be completed. Pursue Fork Union revitalization, you know, that's certainly happening with the small business advisor down there. Let's see here, county admin building, I know Mr. Hodge brought that up. Me and Mr. Witten spoke about that. You know, really, we just need to kind of pull together the RFP and make sure we get the right information to push out on that.
So Mr. Dahl glossed over the James River Water Project, but I think it's important to note that we actually have real movement on that now with the issuance of the Army Corps permit.
Yeah. Well, and the trees.
And trees have been on the ground since the time they needed to be on the ground.
And I just had a picture hit my email today that there's a bunch of pipe sitting in a yard and ready to be delivered. So.
Yeah, there's movement. That's a good thing.
But yeah, anyway, like I said, we could go through all this. You know, a couple of the good things under financial stewardship, I will say ACH EFTs. I think thank you to Mr. Hodge in his former role with the county and Mr. Notman in IT and finance and the treasurer's office. That piece is starting to move forward. Some of those things, we're starting to get individuals trickling in on that. Credit cards, we have a contract for that. That has to be implemented by October 1, so that's kind of the next thing moving forward.
And I wanted to highlight that we do have a very active code enforcement officer now who has stepped up our enforcement efforts, responding to resident feedback and complaints and getting out there to see what's going on both in Columbia and throughout the county. So,
Mr. Grody, you
I just have one question. Just put it on people's radar. D4, the $500,000 for the recreation green space.
Yep.
We've talked about that before. Any update on where those funds would be?
No, I've been pinging Dominion a lot, and I was supposed to get a call yesterday, and I didn't, so I'm going to ping again. So, I'm trying to get timing from them on when they're expecting to get all their approvals, because that's really kind of the. That's really important.
I was driving down the road the other day in Brema, and there was a tractor trailer that went in there hauling stuff in. Like they were starting to.
It's possible.
I don't know what it had, but it was a tractor trailer that turned in there where they're going to put the bowl.
Okay.
Any other questions I can answer for you tonight? Mm-hmm. Or make a note of and get back to you at a future time?
Well, thank you for keeping track of this.
Thank you.
All right, we will move on to item D, Board of Supervisors Planning Retreat.
Yeah, so I mean, kind of going back to what we just discussed, again, the board generally has planning retreats every 2 years, which coincides with the transition of a new incoming board in January of an even year. Again, the Board of Supervisors held their last planning retreat in August 2022, which created the two-year plan. And again, with the transition of up to new board members, you know, generally that's the time to do so. During the planning retreat, the board may also want to review its bylaws, mission statement, vision statement, and discussion of specific issues or challenges facing the county. In the current fiscal year budget for 24, $5,000 was budgeted for such a task. So again, just looking for feedback from the board on this, you know, I think it's a valuable thing to do. The way that we do it, it can be maybe seen differently. And not to downplay what was done last time. You know, I think we've had, over the years, we've had maybe more successful planning retreats than others. But again, just want to get some feedback from the board on the structure. You know, is there a budget, timing, and then certainly from, depending on how you want to do it, will then kind of flavor the discussion of when it's held. Because if we get a facilitator, you know, usually that's out a little bit. They may not have availability come, you know, next month or something like that. So like I said, I just want to open that up for discussion with the board.
I'll say that, so I had done two of them. One when I was on the board that one year in 2011, and then this one. Grant Tate did the one in 2011. Actually did up at Thomas Jefferson Library thing here on across from Monticello. And I remember that one feeling like it was productive. It was pretty concise. We were on subject and we kind of walked away with bullet points of here's what we're doing with some clarity. And for whatever reason, the one we did 2 years ago, those of you who were on the board might remember that I couldn't really even pin down why, but I just felt like we weren't getting, in the end we didn't have substance, and that I wasn't sure we had really accomplished anything. And and this could be a subject for another day, but or when we do it, but I felt in that meeting, and I expressed it, that we're talking about two-year goals, or you know, a two-year plan on plenty of things that we knew we weren't going to do in 2 years, and that historically hadn't been, and it was a kind of a placeholder. And my point during that was, well, if we're going to say it's a two-year, here's what we want to accomplish in the next 2 years, then I felt like that's what should be on there. And if it wasn't what we were going to accomplish, then I felt like maybe there should be another list that went on or something.
I agree. I mean, that's why I suggested a point of contact, that anytime you put objectives, they should use that SMART scale, specific, measurable, achievable, who's responsible, and the timeline for doing it. That way, you keep yourself on track. I would say something along those lines would be good. And we shouldn't try to conquer the world in one go.
Yeah.
Do the things that we know we can do.
We know right now that we have things that are going to happen in the next 2 years that we've been waiting for 11 years to happen.
Yeah.
Water is happening. We will have all the water we can use at Downs Crossroads within 2 years. So that's one of the huge things that we have to talk about in economic development.
Yes.
Those things have to be front and center, but we can't forget about everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe the difference between 2 years ago and now is obviously you were the only board member at that point in time. And so, you know, there's been maybe more board cohesion around some of the goals and what we've done in the past in those meetings. So, you know, I'd say with you know, your feelings about that and two new members that, you know, having whether it's Mr. Tate or someone else, you know, be a guide for that process is fine. And I don't disagree with, you know, assigning SMART, you know, criteria to what we're actually putting forth. Doesn't have to be conquered, and sometimes you put these things out there, you know, saying, yes, we're going to try to get to that. But it's a lot of the things, surprisingly, that we do list and put on our goals from that standpoint eventually do get accomplished. So sometimes you have to look beyond just this current year, think about the year down the road.
This is very different from when we first started this. And I hate to bring water up again, but two years ago, we were still sitting here going, well, when's it going to happen? We can see it happening now.
So is this like, you know, tree can mean many different things? Are we talking like a day?
A half day.
Okay.
It's actually more of a full day.
Yeah.
Like a store.
Library.
Only use the restroom. Or not.
Yeah, right. That's in the morning.
Well, again, that's discussion. Does the board want to have something like that? And I think if we do, I think it's good to have a facilitator, moderator, whatever you call it, lead it. And again, there's probably a handful of firms and organizations that do that. I know we used Weldon Cooper Center last time. You know, I know Berkeley Group does stuff like that. I think VCU, didn't you say?
Yeah, I believe they did too. So Virginia Institute of Government has other people besides.
Yeah, so there's a few different outlets we can look into. And so really the question from board is that what we want? And if so, we can start looking into, I guess, the dollar amount is kind of what I would need to kind of use as my guide for what we do.
And do you all have an opinion on, having done multiple ones, on what didn't? I mean, it sounds like you're saying it was a little lacking of substance.
I don't know that. I think the problem was we just had so many things from the last time. We had such a, I'll use the word robust, we had such a robust list from previously. And again, COVID kind of threw a little curveball in things that, things were still getting done, but maybe some things with the community engagement piece and groups didn't maybe happen as much. I just think we had such a robust starting block this time that I think maybe the new discussions didn't happen as much. And so I think that was maybe the little bit of the downfall with the last.
Totally agree with that, because we didn't have things that we knew were going to happen. We had things that we were working towards, or like the CARE Task Force. We got a lot of stuff done. People may not notice it or appreciate some of the things that we did, but we got a lot of stuff done down there. And for the most part, we got the community working together. It was very hard to rate how much we actually got done.
I think going back to your point, Mr. Fairchild, we had such a big list last time. I think we didn't really add a whole lot of new stuff. It was more like, what can we trim back a little bit to realistically get done? So
yeah, I think that kind of, again, I was having a hard time putting my finger on it, but I kind of think that kind of summarizes, looking back 2 years ago, I think it almost felt like it was more of a review than a setting of goals or tasking ourselves. And maybe it was just because there was so much, and it was more of an update almost.
I think it was. I mean, I think I can think of from what the board has done previously, and I think there were some useful ones. I mean, if you come in with a blank slate almost, I think you're going to come up with more, whereas the last one, I think we had such a long list of outstanding that it maybe kind of overshadowed the discussion to bring anything new to the list.
And we did this, was it June? Last time?
It was August. Oh, August of 2022.
Okay.
And so right now, if we wanted to do something like that, I would probably expect that the timing would be around the same, probably, if we got a firm, an outside firm, to act in that capacity.
I will say, if we do it in August, I have to check when our scrimmages are.
So it sounds like, I'm not sure if you've said anything, but sounds like everybody else is thinking we need to do it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I'm more or less deferring to you all, since all three of y'all were at the last one, and especially these two have been in them for several times now.
It's a great opportunity to sit down and sort of just spitball different ideas and goals and visions.
I mean, I would,
I'd
certainly defer to the three of you on format and things. You have much more perspective on what's productive, what's not. And then I can start to develop my own at this first one.
And I can tell you that from a dollar amount standpoint, from what I've heard and have through discussions, those can range from anywhere between $5,000 to $10,000, depending on the day, depending on, sometimes they're a full weekend long of 2 days. And so I think it really depends on what the board is looking for.
So would you maybe want to talk to a couple of those groups and maybe they can say, well, here's what we do typically. Yeah. And
so we can bring something back. I mean, again, $5,000 was budgeted in the current budget year for it. nothing is in 25, and so we could always carry this money over into the next budget year.
Yeah.
If that's kind of if $5,000 is like the dollar amount the board wants me to shoot at. I mean, obviously the board wants me to be below that, but if that's the high watermark.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like to me, talk to those different ones, see what it costs for however many hours we typically average and what they propose that the format would be. And
I mean, we won't stay below 5,000, but if we have to go above it, that's what the contingency is
for. Yeah. All right. I'll just from just to give them some kind of things to look at. I mean, they may have their own ideas. I mean, are we looking for a one-day thing? Are we looking for a two-day thing?
I think one day is enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
I'm good with one day, unless it's a balance debt.
Unless it's what?
I think we'll be pushing the $5,000.
What are you saying?
He said the lessons at the homestead.
Oh. Yeah. And we'll do it on the golf course then.
Yeah. Y'all can go back to Utah if you want.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, we can do that too.
All right, I think I've got my marching orders. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, action matters, proclaiming May 2024 Older Americans Month. Ms. Ginger Dillard, JABA Chief Operating Officer.
Miss Marta Keene will be coming.
Where's
up.
Where's Marianne and Ginger?
Ginger took vacation, so you get me. Okay, so I think you all know I'm Marta Keene, CEO for JABA, and I'd like to put forth a proclamation that I think you have in front of you. That's May as Older Americans Month. Whereas May is the Older Americans Month, a time for us to recognize and honor the many older adults in Fluvanna County and their immense influence on every facet of American society. And whereas Fluvanna County recognizes how through their wealth of life experiences and wisdom, older adults guide our younger generations and carry forward abundant cultural and historical knowledge. And whereas Fluvanna County recognizes the older Americans improve our community through intergenerational relationships, community service, civic engagement, and many other activities. And whereas Fluvanna County benefits when people of all ages, abilities, and backgrounds have the opportunity to participate and live independently. And whereas Fluvanna must ensure the older Americans have the resources and support needed to stay involved in their communities, reflecting our commitment to inclusivity, connectedness, and now, therefore, be it resolved on this first day of May 2024, the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim May 2024 as Older Americans Month. We call upon all residents to recognize the profound impact of meaningful interactions and social connections on the well-being and health of older adults in our community. And if I could just add, separate from the proclamation, this year the theme is Powered by Connection. And I think that's a great theme because we've got so many services here in Fluvanna that serve seniors, Parks and Rec, Department of Social Services, Meals on Wheels, the Fluvanna Louisa Housing Foundation, your many churches, neighbors, families, seniors, helping seniors, and of course JABA. But it's just, connections are exactly what it's about in Fluvanna.
Any questions? Thoughts?
I looked down and one thing caught my attention. This thing was done the year before, the two oldest members of this board were born.
Yeah.
I think if you fit in, the two oldest members make the motion.
All right, Grandpa, you will take it.
I move the Board of Supervisors to proclaim May 2024 Older American Month.
Second.
Month.
All right. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Board votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Thank you for your
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, item F, authorization to advertise building inspection fees. Mr. Whitten?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. And one clarification, when we get to the motion, it should be June 20th, not June 19th. So basically, the building official did come to Ms. Harris and myself about raising the building fees. And so he, basically in our ordinance, he went through all the fees and looked at the areas where they could be increased. They've not been increased since 2009, so it's been quite a long time. Basically, it would increase revenue by $25,000. There was one fee where there was a mistake that Mr. Hodge caught. It should have been going from 6 cents to 10 cents, and it said from 6 cents down to 1 cent. So that was not the intent. So we did change that, and we have the public hearing. We'll make sure we have that correct fee in your packet. Next slide. But if there's any questions about the fees or any of them,
So for one, this was the fee right.
This was the fee right there.
Yeah, seven, that was the fee that said 0.01 previously. So we made the change. So that will be fixed and corrected. Obviously, in the next iteration. But you can see Mr. Wills and his department went through, and let me get rid of some of this stuff. They compared a lot of the, you know, a lot of our neighboring counties and similar counties for what they charge for the different fees. And again, from them going through and increasing the fees, it doesn't make us the highest, it doesn't make us the lowest, kind of puts us right in between. But again, you know, Mr. Wills and his staff feels that this is good for Savannah County, and again, we haven't changed fees since 2009, so we're long overdue on this.
And also, the planning fees should come to you May 15th, so we should have the public hearing for building fees and planning fees in the June 20th. Right.
Great. So, happy to answer any questions.
Putting the pressure on.
All right, questions?
I move that the Board of Supervisors advertise the amendments to the County Code to amend Section 5-2-2, Schedule of Building Fees for Public Hearing, to be held June
20th,
2024. Second. Motion made by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. Hodge. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody against? Board votes, chair votes aye, 5-0. We have no public consent. Hearing.
Yeah.
Consent agenda, anybody have anything?
I move we accept the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Hodge, second by Mr. Goad, all in favor?
Aye.
Board votes aye, passes 5-0. We have unfinished business.
I would be a little remiss if I didn't say this. Again, typically in a vote for a volunteer, the member who is of that district gets to make that position, which is fine. I understand that maybe the person that I selected isn't what the board wanted. But, you know, I find it deeply disturbing that volunteers weren't given a second at the very least, and that a vote wasn't taken. And in particular, this particular candidate is an elected official for the largest HOA in the community. And I think we made a grave mistake in at least not giving him a second. So I'm just going to leave it at that. But I hope next time we'll be a little bit more thoughtful when we take these votes.
And I'll just tell you, he's the only member of the list that I've never met.
You can't second.
I couldn't second it.
I understand that. Yeah. I'm just saying that. Just general protocol for volunteers coming here, you should at least offer a second. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be a challenge about this.
you know, when I, my first...
Difficult, board, that's what I was going to say.
There you go. Yes.
The first board meeting that I did in 2011, and I didn't even know the Planning Commission seat was... Bacon, and Joe Chesser called me the next morning, that Thursday, and said, hey, you need to choose who you want to be on the Planning Commission. And it just so happens it was Steve. And I said, but I don't understand why do I make that decision? And I always thought it was odd that one board member would make the decision for a Planning Commission position, yeah. Especially when we vote on so many other committees and so on.
And I'm not arguing that point.
Okay.
Of what I'm saying, generally, if you are the member of that commission, you get your first choice. Doesn't mean that that choice is taken. That's okay. I understand that. And we had excellent candidates from this time.
Yeah.
You know, but hey, it's my district. These are the people. This is one of my constituents from the district. All of them were in this case. You know, and so in that situation, it's sort of general protocol that you allow that board member to make the motion. It happens from there. Fails, if the motion fails, that's fine, but it should not fail because there was no second. And in particular, it should not fail when there's a second when you're looking at another official, you know, who is representing that community. I mean, I just think that's sending a really negative message to the relationship between the board. So, you know, and I think it's a negative message to anybody who's coming in and, you know, putting up their time, energy, and effort to reach out to us to not give them the second. I just found I was just very dismayed.
Any other unfinished business? And thank you for that. New business.
I have one item.
Older or new?
New. We never talked about this. Lately, when pool companies have been filling their trucks to fill pools, whether it's by Food Lion or over by CVS, it causes low pressures to go off in the aqua system. And I also was made aware that we, in order to have circulation in the tank at Zion Crossroads, that we have to flush periodically. Why don't we reach out to these pool companies and offer them a rate better than Aqua has? So rather than us flushing the water, we actually sell it to the pool companies and make it in their best interest. We make money. We stop the alarms, the false alarms in effect going off. It's a win-win for everyone. They get the water cheaper to put in people's pools. We allow that water circulate in the tank if somebody could take that on. And then the second item I had was in relation to that. Have we ever considered having a false alarm ordinance? There's some addresses when they pop up.
We've talked about that because I'm not going to call out addresses.
No.
But there's one that goes off quite often and wakes everybody
up. A false fire alarm?
No, yeah. Any false alarm.
Any.
Whether it could be a medical alarm.
Fires. One
quite often
fire. Quite often.
We get them for medical alarm too. Quite often you go out and the person's taking the help me, I fall on, I need help, and throwing it on the floor to get us to come out. They just want to talk to us. And they turn down the medical transport. I don't need it. Just kind of needed to see you guys.
So who would determine? That would seem to me to be a subjective vote. Who would determine whether it was a false alarm or not? But
yeah.
I mean, we can research it.
Research what other counties do. I've actually never researched the issue, or the issue.
If I remember correctly, somebody had one where it was like, if you got three false alarms at the same address in a month, then you would have a fine. But because we've had some that...
Albemarle and Charlottesville have a fine after. The first two, you know, you said, okay, that's fine.
The medical alarm...
I've heard of ordinances like if your alarm is faulty, you know, it's calling the fire department out there.
Yeah.
I've heard that kind of an ordinance.
Yeah.
The one we had issues with all the time, a lot of times, was faulty water pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd roll four companies.
Faulty
water pressure?
Yeah.
Why would a fire...
Fire suppression system.
If the building is big enough, it has its own fire suppression system. And so if you have low water pressure, then it's on... three companies in the ladder truck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Kenstor or Palmyre, Fork Union, Palmyre, Kenstor, and then the lake would get down to the ladder.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Albemarle has kind of a similar thing as well, too.
Well, that's where I think we looked at it from.
And then false alarms.
Knock on wood.
You know, if you have an alarm system and you're not maintaining it, whatever, you
major
false
issue.
Alarms, the police will eventually start charging you for the false alarms.
And the reason I wanted to look at this and to look at it holistically on the rescue side as well, is we have a particular address and we've asked for social services to get involved with this person, but because there's circumstances where they cannot get involved, there's not anything they can do, but the problem persists. So, I mean, what I would not want to happen is have a staffed ambulance dealing with that when somebody has a heart attack or something else, and they have to wait for one to come from Palmyra or somebody else or ALS1 to get in, and we actually lose a person for a situation that we knew about and didn't do something to address it to make it stop or at least reduce in frequency. And some there's citizens in the community that listen to the scanner when they hear the same ones. I've had them reach out to me and say, why are you constantly there? I just tell them, I can't talk to you about that, but you've noticed something.
So what are we saying? What are you saying?
It becomes a drain on your volunteers.
Yeah, because if you keep on going. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I get the negative. Okay. I'm just saying, what are we doing about it?
I'll research it and look at the other localities.
Okay.
Like, I don't love the subjective element, but it's just if the alarm keeps going off and you get called out there and there's no emergency, your wine room alarm's going off and keep going off, Yeah. But subjective, someone, really it's a DSS concern. I know once, wait, I should in our locality where someone just needed help off the toilet. So she had called 911 when she needed help off the toilet. And they'd be out there multiple times a week until she eventually passed away. They try to get DSS involved, she didn't want help. So that's where it gets kind of subjective.
We've had that with people. Yeah.
So we can look at that.
Research and see different options.
We would enforce that. If there was a...
I mean, if there was a fine, basically it would probably be a civil fine that you would take to court if they didn't pay the civil fine.
And to go back, Mr. Hodge, to your original one, too, about the pools and stuff, I don't know if I talked about this with Ms. Hoffman before when the ordinances were created or Mr. Popowitz, but I think it's a fair point and a fair idea to do. I don't think, one, our ordinance currently is that written to allow for bulk water purchases in that capacity, but I think it's something that we can add in there. And again, I think depending on where those trucks are going, I think our water would have to be much cheaper up at Zion's Crossroads if they're delivering it right around the lake somewhere. But again, there may be purposes for them to be able to utilize that water. And I hear what you're saying.
I would imagine there's far more pools outside the lake than in the lake.
Well, yeah. And when I say, I'm talking about the outskirts of the lake, more so than in the lake.
Even if you got $10 for a truckload, it's still $10 you didn't have. And water you're not putting in the ground.
Yeah, I agree.
Or flushing.
We can look at the ordinance and see what's there to have that.
I have one other potential piece of new business here, or piece of new business that involves a previous supervisor and longstanding member of Lake Monticello. For those of you who didn't know him, his name was Len Gardner, and his son John Cherry has been trying to work with the LMOA board to try to see if there was a way to memorialize him in some form or another. It's challenging for the LMOA board in some respects just because of the way the membership is designed. And in some of the conversations that I've had with some of the board members there, they've said perhaps the county could find some way to show some sort of designation, whether it's naming a small bridge or putting a plaque somewhere or doing something along those lines. Mr. Gardner served in World War II, was at Pearl Harbor when it occurred. He spoke before this board during one of the Veterans Day, and he spoke about how when he was a young boy, there were Civil War veterans here. He served on the board here as well, too, and he, I think, was a board member at Lake Monticello as well. He passed away a couple of years ago. His wife, Doris, is still alive. I think this would be his 100th anniversary. And so if there's some way that we can look to see how we might be able to honor Mr. Gardner in a way that's consistent in recognizing the outstanding achievements of many members in this community, but in particular, I think when you have somebody of that stature, it behooves us to try to find a way to honor him appropriately.
Do you remember how many years he's on the board?
I don't know.
This board?
Yeah. Eight?
While we're talking, I'm sure we'll get it.
I was thinking of somewhere around two terms.
Yeah.
The Crofton Bridge isn't named after anyone by the boat landing.
The what?
The Crofton Bridge by the boat landing. That might be an ideal location.
Yeah, because if you remember, some of the board members, this came up before because Mr. Gardner's son-in-law approached the county, and this is almost 2 years ago at this point, and said that Lake Monticello was... They were working with Lake Monticello on doing something there, and through some discussions with the lake, the GM, a couple of GMs, and I think some of the board members, as Mr. O'Brien said, I think it's maybe a little more challenging.
I think the desire is there. It's just they can't do it with because they need 3/4 members approval to do something like that. They can't really do what they'd like to do. It was suggested by Mr. Sherry that maybe they rename the dam, you know, because that part of the road, nobody lives on it, right? It's just the dam, but even something like that is
so you'd have to have a 3/4, you'd have to get 3/4
of the residents.
Oh, okay, yeah. Not the board.
Yeah.
No, that's for something like that.
Yeah. And is that 3/4 of a vote or 3/4 of all the residents?
3/4 of all the residents.
So it's not just a vote and 75% of those who vote.
Yeah. Right. Being inside the lakes,
one of the challenges that they have with making changes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, structure and keep in mind.
So if you don't get 75% turnout,
you're done.
Yeah. Is that state directed that they have to have, that HOA has to have?
Depends on the restrictive covenants, how they respond.
Yeah. It's their own covenants. But that's one of the challenges that they have around, say, raising, you know, the dues by more than 3%, even though they need it. Which, going back to Maria's point, you know, how do we raise the money for doing something like that? Hard to do for them from that standpoint. So
I mean again, I'm not sure what the process is to name a bridge or name a road. I mean I know we can name roads and stuff like that. We have to go through VDOT. I mean, one other thought is, I mean, certainly, and I'm not sure if the board wants to consider, I mean, certainly there's been at the county's Civil War Park, we put memorial items in there for you know, those individuals that have served our county and in some capacity, or you know, like Mr. Rigsby, who passed away.
If there's any way we could do one for him, but to make it for all veterans.
Yeah.
Well, and or an ongoing, you know, list of fallen Slovenians and or long members of the community as well.
So to answer your question, Mr. Gardner was elected first term 1991, elected again in 1995, and my phone
99.
And 99, and finishing in 2003. So he
12.
Years. His wife Doris is, I think, 98, and I think the family is very hopeful that we can that some recognition of him in the county.
So how do we want to pursue this?
I guess. Does the board want staff to look at something regarding a road naming or something that we have some control over? I guess we've got some control over road naming, too.
So, why don't you talk to, I mean, do you feel comfortable talking to the wife and saying, hey, or do you have ideas yourself?
I don't have any particular ideas myself, but I can certainly reach out to them and say that this is, you know, what we're considering from that standpoint. But we have, I'd say to answer your question, control and, you know, roads or bridge or something like that would be...
I'm not
nice as well too.
I don't date back in politics long enough to remember, but was there anything that he was strategic in, or maybe reach out to Mill because they were on the board?
They served together, and if I remember correctly, I thought were him and Mr. Weaver kind of the key individuals in the purchase of Pleasant Grove Park.
I could be like a tree and a mark.
I mean, I don't know. Just another thought.
Did Don vote for purchasing Pleasant Grove?
Yes, he did.
Yes.
Look, did you don't? He'll come in that door in a second.
You're in trouble.
Yeah. Well,
and or maybe we have a plaque on the flag that we have at Pleasant Grove Park as well, too.
I mean, some sort of. Yeah, I mean, certainly from Civil War Park in the village, certainly from Pleasant Grove Park. I mean, those are things that we have 100% ultimate control over. I mean, so if you want to do something like that, or if it's a road, you know, I guess maybe.
Sounds like, to me, a good idea. That the flag, it's certainly very representative of the
veterans.
Yeah, of his service, the military service.
Yeah.
So, do you want to
reach out and kind of get back, but I just wanted to see if there's enough consensus on the board.
I still remember the teacher.
We'll do it for you, when you.
That was amazing, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh!
I mean, he just stood here and
you got goosebumps listening.
And if I remember correctly, I think Mr. Gardner, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought he was the last living survivor of Pearl Harbor in the state of Virginia.
And maybe I'll pass that information out if that's the case. But there's a whole sort of history of Mr. Gardner and his accomplishments from that standpoint. But
Tony, I don't think you heard me. When you being our senior member, we'll do it when you pass.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't necessarily pretend to stand to anything like that. But, I will say that when I first ran, he was kind enough to spend some time talking to me. And at that point in time, they were living near the bridge itself. I think that was part of it. Their house was near the dam. And they were telling me stories about people riding their Volkswagen Bugs on the ice.
Oh, geez.
When there was nobody around.
All right, so you're going to look it up.
Yeah, I'll communicate with Mr. O'Brien, and we'll see what the consensus is and bring something back.
Anything else? All right, we'll move on to item 13, second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board to come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board.
Good evening. My name is James Schoenster with 843 Jefferson in Palmyra. And don't quote me on this, but I think Mr. Gardner had some involvement with the Fluvanna Review, so you may want to talk to them as well.
He started it.
I did want to highlight some issues that I have stemming from the way the board selects folks for the community to sit on other county boards. While I share some of Tony's concerns, I just want to add a few of my own. The first is the deference to folks who've been serving for several terms, and then also selecting people who have the time, which often translates to being retired or otherwise not actively employed. These both result in excluding a certain demographic from service, a demographic I'm currently a part of, but I hope that when I do get a little bit older that I still share this perspective, that a differing perspective isn't just a combination of buzzwords. It actually does carry some value. It doesn't take long to start talking to folks in high school like I've done, and I already recognize that they have a different perspective from my own. And so if in 20 years I'm in a position that you guys are in, I do take them seriously and consider their perspectives, because we need to have that diversity on our boards in order to find the best way to move forward for our county. So just wanted to offer that up, and hope that you consider that next time you're choosing people for these new boards. Thanks.
Tom Diggs, 947 Jefferson Drive. I want to thank you all for voting to intervene in the Aqua case that was heard by the hearing examiner yesterday. And I want to let you know that the county attorney, Mr. Witten, performed admirably and represented the county well.
Takes while, one to know one.
Yes, fellow tribe. While we did not get the decrease in the increase, if you will, that we had hoped for, Lake Monticello did get 2 points out of it that would not have likely occurred had you all not intervened. The first is that because of all of the spills into Lake Monticello, Aqua Virginia will now be required not only to account to the Department of Environmental Quality, but anytime it comes up for a rate increase, it will be required to report to the State Corporation Commission how it has handled each spill, what caused it, how much was spilled, a few other details. The second point, there were roughly 2,300 individual comments submitted to the count, to the State Corporation Commission. I'm guessing out of that, probably in the neighborhood of 1,800 or 1,900 specific addresses across the Commonwealth. There were a number of people who did it twice, some who signed a petition also submitted a comment, but in the neighborhood of 1,800. The company, Aqua Virginia, is going to be required to submit to the State Corporation Commission details of how they have addressed all complaints against the company. Now, I think it's going to fall into two broad categories. People who said, this is awful, you shouldn't increase your rates, it's terrible, it's going to hurt us. Those are going to get probably a, well, too bad, the State Corporation Commission approved the rate, there's nothing we can do to help. Then there's the second point, which is people who say they've called Aqua, were unsatisfied, but were never told by Aqua, you have the right to contact the State Corporation Commission directly and file a complaint. Those type of complaints, people who called and said, I think my meter is inaccurate. They don't get a response. They don't have somebody come out to check. Those are the reports and complaints that Aqua will have to address with specificity 6 months after the State Corporation Commission itself approves whatever the final rates are. And so without your all's intervention, I do not believe that either of those conditions would have been in. So thank you very much. Personally, and on behalf of the Community Development Committee, and informally on behalf of Lake Monticello.
Thank you for all your hard work.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes,
you're
welcome. Thank you. Anybody else? All right, we'll close public comment and go to a closed meeting.
No, closed session.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A.5, prospective industry discussion concerning a prospective business or industry or the expansion of an existing business or industry where no previous announcement has been made. Prospective business updates in the Columbia and Fork Union districts, and Section 2.2-3711A.7, litigation, consultation with legal counsel, and briefings to staff members or consultants pertaining to actual or probable litigation, Aqua Virginia and Chiripka v. Treadway.
You forgot to say the Code of Virginia.
Of the Code of Virginia, 1950, as amended for the purpose of discussing the topics as mentioned.
I'll let you second that.
Second.
Thank you.
Motion made by Mr. Hyde, second by Mr. Ryan. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Pass 5-0.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed session be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Being resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second. Oh man, we were all together.
You gotcha.
That was the loudest gym voice.
Motion made by Mr. Hodge.
Where were you a second when I needed that?
You got us all gunshot. We're
second. Second by Mr. Sheridan. Roll call.
Aye.
Call him by name.
Mr. Hodge.
Aye.
Mr. Goode.
Aye.
Mr. Sheridan.
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0.
Motion to adjourn.
Did you want to say something?
Well, I mean, is there anything that anyone would want to bring up? We are having our board of directors meeting to talk about the VACO platform.
Legislative platform.
Legislative platform for this year. So is there anything?
Treating private utilities as public utilities should change.
Okay. I mean, all seriousness.
That is a legitimate.
There's at least eight counties, maybe more than.
Mr. Black is on there with me. So,
we need to come up with a plan to have private utilities treated separately from public utilities.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have anything other than that.
I mean, the other one thing, I mean, this year's a prime example of it. I've raised it to our state senator, our delegate. I've also raised it when the U.S. senator was here. I've heard it from our registrar office. I've talked to the Charlottesville registrar, and the election season with the amount of early voting we have, and I'm not saying I'm against early voting, but even when the registrars say you go from one election to the next and there's a week gap in there, if we could look at something shorter or have them propose that, to just think about it as legislation, maybe get the registrars and the county administrators to come to a consensus, whether it's 2 weeks or 30 days, but the 45 days means in years like this year, it's one election contest into another.
We've brought that up. That's been a topic of discussion. Just not only for that, but you take, I'll bring us up. We have to rent a place in order to put our registrar there because we can't facilitate it at the old registrar's office in Palmyra.
Yep.
So it costs us money to register, to rent the place. It costs us money to have it equipped. It costs us money to have it manned because now you got 45 days, and that's not counting Sundays, correct? So that's just 6 days a week. So I'm all for giving people the opportunity to vote. I'm not trying to be against that, but primary.
Yeah, it's another example of an unfunded mandate from the state. If the state was willing to pay for this and take some of the burden off us, and I can't even begin to fathom what it would be like for some of the rural counties over west of Stanton.
Southwest Virginia.
Yeah, in Southwest Virginia, where they don't have the economic base or anything at all. It blows my mind.
One gentleman that left the board of directors because he stepped down or did not run for re-election this past year was a gentleman from Rockingham by the name of Billy Kiger. And his famous quote was, "You don't have a surplus until your debts are paid." Mm-hmm. And too many times we're saying we got a surplus and we're not paying our debts at the state level.
Unfunded debts.
Yes, that's something we have brought up before.
It should be funny as what we should be requesting.
Yes. I will take it either way. I'm sure if the registrar office, had help and other stuff, it's just labor. So
one of the weekend. What was the net increase to us for the one
as
year
Frazier
from like a 2 week early voting?
Scopolet.
Oh, God.
I don't remember, but it wasn't.
And
it was probably like that. It was probably $1,000.
No, all of us is at 14 you got.
So Tim, well, I think I just asked him, but and he can double check. When we went from regular voting to extended voting, I think the net increase to us was like $10,000.
I mean, still, it's
not a huge number, but it's not a. But it is an unfunded mandate.
But if you
think it's it's extra workload on. And when you go see this face, you can see the stress in their face.
No, I would agree. Now, the one thing that doesn't include, that includes the additional part time. Now, by doing early voting, we had to get a different location. Now, that's kind of a different answer.
That's what I'm talking about. We had to get an expanded location.
Something you may not be aware of that I'm aware of, but she'd mentioned that this would be one of her last years. She wanted to get through this presidential. So we may have new people in there.
No.
And other employees that work in there were hinting themselves on whether Ms. Pace was there. So,
did you have any?
He's one of six.
All right.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We go on.